very good Friday morning out there in Radioland. Adam here substituting for Scott S. and or Glenn C. on a program that has two names. Either on the air or my favorite name, Scott and or Glenn at 10. I'll be with you till about 11 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time with my special guest. And I've been kind of talking about this on social media. My guest name is Danny Jordan. He lives on the north end of the capital city, which used to be Chillicothe in Zanesville. It's now Columbus, and that's where he hangs his hat. He has a quite interesting, to put it mildly. I know we use that word a lot on radio, interesting, but I think it's justified here. A fascinating resume, or vita, I guess they call it, in the corporate world. He used to own an antique store in the largest city in the Midwest. You know, Columbus is the second largest city in the Midwest. Did you know that, Pastor Craig? You knew that. I figured you would know. Pastor Craig is here watching the show. He might participate. He's always a good person to have as a co-host. Anyway, in Chicago, he used to own an antique store, and he still has a large collection of antique typewriters, phonographs, record players, Victrolas, cameras, sewing machines, and much, much more. It's really, really quite fascinating. And we wanted to talk about the antique business, about how things have changed. Because obviously, with an antique, you're looking at items that were used, you know, 100, 150 years ago. And so every year, something becomes more of an antique. Some of my friends might say that I'm an antique. You know, human beings can certainly be that way. We are taking your telephone calls, and that's one thing we want to get out there. If you have a question about an antique, maybe how valuable is an antique item that you have, or even something that's a recent appliance, electronic item, etc. Will it be an antique? Will it be valuable? Will it not be? You know, a couple generations from now. Danny's happy to answer those questions, as he is an expert, to put it mildly. We're going to talk about his collection of typewriters, Victrolas, and other stuff, but also going to talk about the antique business and how it's changed and how things went for him when he did had his store there in Chicago. Let me make sure that the intern has properly duct-taped the cords, properly adjusted the cables, and other things that you have to do when you prepare for a radio program. Danny, how are you on this fine Friday morning?
Having me on the show.
Good. I turned up the right slider. Just get a little closer to your microphone, please. That's okay. Fine. We want to hear your dulcet tones, because that's how we roll here in the broadcasting business. Danny, you're a personal friend of mine, and before I really befriended you, do they still say that word? I wasn't aware that you had this, as Donald Trump would say, huge, ginormous collection of antique typewriters. Is that plural of Victrola, Victroli, or Victrolas, or record players, cameras, and other stuff? And it's really quite fascinating. I know I told one of my other friends in Columbus, you know, you would just have to see this collection of antiques that this guy has. And I'm not sure he believed me, but once he saw it, because he's really into records and record players like I am, we were quite impressed. Again, if you have a question about antiques, about older record players, because they are fascinating, typewriters, any kind of an antique item, feel free to give us a ring, 740-383-9944. We're live here in the studio on this rather wintry Friday morning in Marion, Ohio. So, Danny, when you had that antique store in the Windy City of Chicago, how did that come about? I mean, Chicago, bustling town to 24/7, urban area, but the cost of living is kind of high too. So as long as you're making a profit, being in business is a wise thing. How did that come about?
Well, I was working as a graphic artist, and that job was going to end. So I decided that I'd open a small antique place just for the weekend in the first antique mall in Greater Chicago itself, which was opened by some friends of mine. And when I left the graphic arts company, I thought, well, I should go full-time and do this 7 days a week. And fortunately, a store was open for rent across the street from where I lived, so I just rented it, moved the business, put out a shingle, and started up.
And what part of town was that? Chicago has all these wonderful neighborhoods, and you just move a couple blocks, and you kind of see a transition.
Yeah, yeah.
And the architecture, yeah. Too. I don't know if Cincinnati has great architecture. Yeah. I'm sorry, Columbus really doesn't. But Cincinnati is the closest that we have to that here in the Buckeye State. So what part of town was it in?
Well, I was in the near north at Armitage and Halstead. Definitely
a nice area. Yeah.
Yeah, it was a nice area, a lot of people. It was on the up and coming at the time. It was actually Latin King territory, so there wasn't much going on as far as crime was concerned. They took care of that in other areas of the city. So it was interesting. The store was rather pretty successful right from the start. I was happy about that.
Well, that's good. I would think the rent wouldn't exactly be at the bargain basement category. No,
the rent wasn't bad. It was
it was up and coming at that time, because that area now is trendy and expensive and busy 24/7. In Chicago, bars are open and some are open until 4 in the morning and 5 in the morning on Saturday. So by the time that people are finished drinking, it's time to go shopping or to take a walk the dog. It's a bustling area.
Definitely.
With the diversity of people.
Definitely. And at $300 a month rent, you can't knock that.
You know, one city that reminds us of Chicago is Toronto, and you're actually a native of Toronto. You're a Canadian.
Yes. Yes.
And so that's kind of fascinating. Toronto and Chicago are similar in many ways. Great diversity of people. You go a few blocks, you change neighborhoods, but you still see you still see the heart and soul of the big city itself.
Absolutely, and never boring.
Definitely. If you're bored in Toronto or Chicago, you're a boring person, because there's really no way for that to happen. Nice thing about being in Central or Mid Ohio is we're close to both cities. They're both actually about a 6-hour drive. So, do you have any favorites among the two? I mean, we know it's a little biased being a native Canadian, but I think people that have been to both cities, like I have, shopped, you know, gone to stores and, you know, had a few cold ones, I'll admit it. Both cities are good for that. And the Asian restaurants in Toronto are amazing. And no secret, I'm an aficionado of Asian food. Well, food in general, but certainly the Asian culture in Toronto is just wonderful. And Chicago has a wonderful Chinatown.
Yes.
And a diversity that's all over the city. Do you have any good things you'd like to talk about? Maybe some contrast between those cities? Or just kind of advise our listeners, if you do want to take a road trip, those are both two good places to go to.
Well, they're not that far apart. You can get to Toronto in about 6.5 hours. It's a great ride, friendly city, lots to do. You can go for a weekend. Great place to visit.
This is the Talking Place. Adam substituting for Scott E. Spears, the interviewer to the stars, as he is off today. My special guest is a gentleman named Danny Jordan, who lives on the north end of Columbus, O.H., the second largest city in the Midwest, and he used to own an antique shop in the first largest city in the Midwest, Chicago, and he's a native of the great city of Toronto, Ontario, our friends to the north in Canada. We are taking your phone calls, and again, if you have a question about antiques, maybe you're wondering if something that you own is an antique, or how much it might be worth, or about collecting antiques, where to shop for antiques. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of antique shows and stores in this great state. This is the time to call, because there are things that I'm an expert in, like music from 73 to 87, state capitals, radio to an extent, but I don't claim an expertise in antiques. I know a little bit, but my knowledge is a smidgen of what Danny knows. So feel free to give us a ring. Don't be shy. 740-383-9944. Pastor Craig Heilman is in the studio with us. He's not really very early for his show on Sunday. I think he's going to go home before he goes on the air Sunday. But, Craig, if you have any questions, feel free to let us know, as antiques really are fascinating. Good. Go ahead and take the green microphone. Let's see if See if I got the right thing turned up. Let's see, Craig. Can we hear you? Okay.
Yeah, I'm sure you probably have the right one turned up.
I do believe we do. Yes, you had a question for our esteemed guest on this Friday morning.
Well, unfortunately, it's not about antiques. It's about Toronto. Because
okay.
Because in the 60s, I spent a lot of time as a youth in the 60s and early 70s in Toronto, because my mother is a native of Toronto.
Oh,
and
great.
So when you said you were a native, that's what perked up my ears.
Great.
And I just want to say I have a lot of fond memories from Toronto. When we would go up there in the summertime, and I was a young kid. I mean, I was 9, 10, 11 years old. My parents would give me quarters, and I literally would ride the subways
yes.
for hours. And my parents didn't worry about me. I mean, that's how
right.
safe a city Toronto was back then. Mm-hmm. And I would ride, I'd ride the north-south from one end to the other, and then in the middle, I'd catch the east-west, and I'd run mm-hmm. it. And as a young kid, I had all the stops memorized,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of fond memories of Toronto. It is a great city.
Yeah, very clean. And, you know, Ottawa, sometimes compared to Columbus, it's bigger than you think it is. It's the capital. Very clean. I'd say Columbus is mostly clean. I mean, there are some areas that are less than clean, but for the most part, for a city that size, it is sanitary and it's safe. Ottawa, though, it's a spotless. You see that, you know, like the Queen's influence. And Canada in general, there are things in common with the United States and things that are not in common. And it's always a fascinating excursion.
Now, I do have an antique question, actually.
Oh, good. Well, that's good, because I think you found the antique expert. He is to antiques, Pastor Craig, like Adam is to music from 73 to 87. As you know, it's hard to stump me. You got to wake up pretty early in the morning to stump me on music from that period. So let's give Danny a try here. I'm sure he has an answer and a plethora of anecdotes to pepper it.
So the question I have is, with all this renewed interest there's been in the last few years in vinyl records, mm-hmm. you know, it's been really, people have been coming interested mm-hmm. in, and now they're even re-releasing
mm-hmm.
old albums on vinyl. They're putting new albums on vinyl. Do you think that the renewed interest in vinyl mm-hmm. will spill over into more interest in, like, the older the Victrolas and the, you know, earlier record players and that type of thing?
Yeah, definitely. I think one will create an interest in the next. They're all related. The history of recording is very interesting. You know, 78 RPM was the only thing that was around for almost 50 years, then 45 RPM came in, and 33 and a thirds, and they tried 16, but that didn't work out too well. The reproduction was bad. But once you get into vinyl, the album is wonderful, but there are so many songs that you can get from the 50s and 60s and 45 RPM that's a good branch for people to follow once they get into vinyl, because those singles are highly collectible right now, especially 50s and 60s. Rock and roll is in vogue again. There isn't much in modern music that has the same effect as rock and roll does.
I don't like anything really after about 1990. It all sounds the same. You know, when you talk about these songs that were number one, you know, 10 weeks, I've never even heard of the artist. I'm sorry. I don't see any character in that music. I know we make fun of the bubblegum songs, The Night Chicago Died, which is one of my favorite songs, by the way. All those bubblegummy, silly, sappy 70s songs, you know, Barry Manilow, Helen Reddy, Olivia Newton-John. These are talented people who've really stood the test of time. Now, there are some contemporary musicians, Kelly Clarkson. Yes, even Lady Gaga. I mean, she's talented. Maybe not quite as much as people might think, and some people kind of worship her. But she is talented, and she's a good role model, I think, for humans in general. But I'm sorry, the rap, the so-called hard rock, which is just overproduced, versus the clean sound of Aerosmith and Bad Company, Led Zeppelin. You just can't compare it. You know. Pastor Craig, we're not that far apart in age.
No, we're not.
We just kind of joke about ages here. Do you agree? I mean, you seem like someone who probably enjoys a good hard rock song.
Oh, I grew up listening to hard rock, and I mean, I loved it. I mean, Led Zeppelin, Bad Company, early Aerosmith. I mean, those were things that I listened to all the time. And you know, I'm a little bit older than you, Adam.
Just
so
a little,
I've always told people that there was no good music after 1982.
Well, yeah,
I, you said, you know.
Well, I was in radio starting in college, 81 to 87. And after that, you know, 89 when the rap kind of came into play. And thinking that's 33 years ago. It's just how long that was. And there are, again, there are some talented musicians, you know. Justin Bieber, I mean, yeah, maybe he sings better than I do, but that doesn't really say very much. But, you know, Kelly Clarkson's a good singer. There are some good performers out there. And the early rap. I always say, Thank God I'm a Country Boy by John Denver was kind of a country rap. And again, Rapture by Blondie, probably the first mainstream rock, new wave, pop, crossover type of tune. And, you know, Blondie were very talented musicians, and Debbie Harry, great singer. You know, Pat Benatar. Some, they were celebrating Women's History Month on Sirius XM, and there were many female musicians like the Wilson Sisters from Heart coming on and just talking about all the great females that have influenced pop and rock and roll. Stevie Nicks and Christine McVie from Fleetwood Mac, so many of them. And yes, there are a few good ones today, but nothing compared to what we had in the 70s and the 80s. You know, one thing, Craig, I'm not sure we've ever talked about this. We have the Christian hard rock bands like Stryper. They're kind of the main one. What do you think about that? I would think you probably would agree. It's okay to rock hard and to have Christian lyrics, and Christian music should be diverse.
This is my personal feeling, and anybody who listens to my show knows it because I've stated it several times, that it was how I raised my kids. But this is my feeling about Christian rock. I like a lot of it. I don't have a problem with it if you can understand the lyrics. You absolutely have to understand the lyrics to really know if it's a, quote, Christian song. If you can't understand what's being sung, then you cannot assume that it's Christian music.
Yeah, and music, like any kind of poetry, has two or three meanings, so you never quite know. But I think it's good. We have, you know, we had Debbie Boone in town. She's done a lot for Christian music. She's, as I say, the biggest one-hit wonder of all time. And, of course, Scott talked to her, but he talks to everybody. So what else would we expect? So anyway, Danny, you mentioned about, we are taking your telephone calls again. Questions about antiques. We can talk about music. I think the three of us can talk about older music. 740-383-9944. Those are the digits. The renewed interest in vinyl. I mean, you have probably thousands of 78s.
You know, yes.
We got a phone call. How about that? It's good when they call because we want to. This show is nothing without our listener participants. Good morning. You're on The Talking Place with Adam and his special guests.
Thanks, Adam. I have a question for Danny.
Sure. He's right here waiting with bated breath to assist you today.
Okay. My question is kind of general, but anybody that watches Antiques Roadshow has certainly, seen the reality of collecting antiques. I have for many years, but how value can fluctuate, and what you had maybe 5 years ago was worth something. Now it's lost its value tremendously. Is this just normal? Will it always be that way, or is it the time we're going through? And if I have something that's lost value over the years, will it ever come back?
Great question. Yes, it is normal for the business. That's why antique dealers have to be very adept at forecasting what's going to be the next hottest item on the market. That is very important. You have to be able to assess what's going on with society as a whole and what direction that's going in. As far as antiques maintaining their value is concerned, That's a loaded question in a way. I would say that most things, no. They're really not going to hold much value. But there are collectors for everything. and you just have to find that market. There will be things that always hold their value, you know, good sculpture, good oil paintings, classic furniture, classic cars. They're going to hold their value. But, you know, the average household item is not really going to hold its value for most people. And it depends on what level of collecting you're into. If you have a lot of money to spend, then you can go after things that will always increase in value. If you don't have a lot of money, then you're taking your chances.
I guess mine was just, you know, you collected if you went to sales or anything, sure. You know, where you had an eye for that sort of thing.
Sure.
And after you've done that for so many years, but my observation has been that if you're talking art generally, like you said, and sculpture and that sort of thing, that it pretty much will, the longer it goes along, the better it gets. But that's a little heartbreaker when you pick something up and you got it and you thought, well, now as long as I hold on to this, it'll just keep going up in value. And when you find out that maybe you should have sold that 5 years ago.
Yeah, well, that's true. You know, and it's like, this is one thing about antique dealing. If you're going to focus on one particular item to collect, go after the best.
Uh-huh.
You may have to start out small, but try to increase, you know, the quality of what you're buying and the design. Look at all of those factors and upgrade what you have when you monetarily are able to do that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, I thank you for your advice this morning.
Oh, well, thank you for calling.
Thank you very much for the call. We always appreciate it. Again, we are a listener-driven station. 740-383-9944. That is the telephone number. We don't really have toll calls anymore. That was also kind of an antique thing. Pretty much as long as you don't call outside the 50 states or Puerto Rico, the cost is zero, and sometimes you can even call Canada and Mexico for free. That's kind of cool.
Yeah.
So antiques, I think, Danny, are they getting a resurgence? It does seem like, as my mama used to say, the more things change, the more they stay the same. We kind of go around in circles.
Well,
like, you know, you probably would agree with this, Craig. It's like, you know, I don't wear ties, but, you know, I don't even know how to tie a tie. But if I did wear a tie, you know that every 10, 20 years, they go thin, they go wide. They kind of go back and forth. It's like if you think your ties are out of style, in 10 years, that kind of be back in style. So don't throw them away. Don't use them for something other than neckwear. And with antiques, with appliances, entertainment items, vinyl really has a resurgence. Now, the 78s, those aren't manufactured, although they have great sound because just scientifically, the faster the record spins, the more sound you can get out of it. And the needle, too, because I had never really in detail seen what the needle looks like on the record player, using that as a generic term, for a 78, but it's thicker, and it sits basically perpendicular to the record itself versus the smaller design of what would play a 33 and a 45.
Well, plus, with those needles, you only get one play. One play per needle.
Right, so you have to buy basically a collection of them. So the needle just lasts the one time.
One play. You know, we are so used to having electronics in our lives that we're totally out of touch with society when it had to live without it. And they were quite inventive. Music for a very long period of time was acoustic. In other words, it didn't have any. It didn't need electricity to work. You wound up a spring. The spring rotated the platter or the cylinder. You put down an acoustic reproducer that had a new needle for each play, and depending on how good the reproducer was, you got sound out of it at different volumes.
Fascinating. And kind of interesting, too, Danny, I was thinking. You have a smartphone, I believe. Yes. You may not be on it 24/7. Like,
well, it's sort of smart.
Like many people are. Yeah, well, sometimes they're not too smart, but at least their IQ is above.
They're only as smart as the person using it.
Right.
So, you know, 1 minute you're playing Kate Smith singing...
sure. God Bless America.
Or some other classic on one of your right. hundreds. And I do mean hundreds, Craig. This man has hundreds of Victroli. That's a plural of Victrola or Victrolas. In the next minute, you're on your smartphone, on Facebook, or checking your email. Is that just kind of does that kind of fascinate you that you're kind of jumping 75 years in technology? 1 minute you're winding up your Victrola to play a golden oldie. The next minute you're on Facebook. The next minute you're on Facebook.
Yeah. Well, I've done it for so many years. I'm not a spring chicken anymore, but I've done it for so many years that I don't even think about it. There are times though when I sit down and I think about what advances have been made in electronics and it really does amaze me when I put on a record that doesn't require any electricity at all to play and reproduce. That does amaze me, and it's still, even after collecting those for 50 years, it still amazes me.
Yeah, you're winding it up just like. Wind-up toys or back-in-the-box from anything. That's essentially what it does. Craig, have you ever personally played a record on a Victrola where you wind it up and then you put the, as the song says, put the needle on the record?
No, I have not. I have not.
Yeah.
But I did have another question.
Yeah.
If I may.
Sure.
Now, when you had your antique business,
yes.
did you also have furniture, or did you just specialize in a few things, or did you have furniture and clothing and everything?
I was a generalist. I had a particular interest in Art Nouveau and Art Deco furniture because they're totally different styles and different time periods, but I loved both of them, so that's what I focused on as much as possible when I had the store. Yeah.
Okay. So the antique furniture, that's something that people still use. You'll often just go into a home and they have this beautiful table, an armoire.
Yeah.
And it doesn't really have the wear and tear. I mean, as long as the dog doesn't scratch it or something.
Correct.
And that's always been a big item. Do you see that getting a resurgence? Or is vinyl records kind of like where it's at right now? What are some of these trends? And the antique furniture, it's art, it's functional, because you can use the armoire, and it's valuable. It's not this cheap, can you say this on the air, junk that you might normally get, even at a fancier furniture store. Yeah. It's not the particle board. Yeah. It's put together well, and it lasts.
Yeah.
Just, you know, you would know this, Craig. I mean, think of how long appliances last.
Yeah.
You know, people joke that a dishwasher refrigerator used to last 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
You're lucky to get 3 years out of it now. In some cases, things just made better. They were handcrafted.
Yeah. Well, there's a big resurgence right now, from what I can tell, in you know, 1950s furniture and early Scandinavian furniture, very well made, very durable, very sleek, very modern. Modern in the 1950s, 1960s way, which is trendy right now. And not bulky, which is not good for most people now because their homes are smaller, apartments are smaller, they have less space, and they usually try to get something that's dual purpose so that they don't have multiple pieces of furniture trying to serve multiple functions. I think that the trend in antiques is very personal, and it usually starts with inheritance. It usually starts with you inheriting something from your grandmother or your grandfather, grandparents, aunts and uncles, and then all of a sudden you get fascinated with it and you want more, because we live in a society that wants more all the time. One of the biggest collectibles right now that has grown exponentially in the last 10 years are typewriters. Typewriters, because they're analog. There are several generations who have not used manual typewriters, have never been exposed to manual typewriters because they've got clickety-clack, clickety-clack. Well, there's a big difference in a manual typewriter and a computer. A computer, you can hit a keystroke and eliminate a mistake. You can't do that with the typewriter, so you have to stop and think about what it is that you're putting on that paper and what key you're pressing so that you don't make a mistake. It requires more thought. I think that in a lot of ways the equipment that we use now requires less thought.
I would say, and many people wouldn't even go back to before you had a touchpad. You actually had physical keys. Now,
yes.
I guess I'm kind of at the age, my mom could type 100 words a minute. My dad could type pretty fast, and I've been tested about 50 words per minute. I'm not sure they were probably short words. I'm not sure I could type that fast, but I mean, I know my way around a typewriter. But my mom would use a manual, just a good old Smith Corona.
Yes.
Where you press the keys, and the little keys go on the ribbon, and the letters or numbers go on the paper. Of course, if you make a mistake, you get out the liquid paper or mm-hmm. some other
yes.
item.
Yes.
You got to check this out, Pastor Craig. This is really quite fascinating. We are taking your telephone calls again. Antique question, comment, suggestion, complaint, all welcome. 740-383-9944. Remember also we have a private email server, which is curated, programmed, and maintained by yours truly. So feel free to send me an email. Unlike certain former first ladies, we don't delete any of them. We read them. If they're junk, we delete them. But most of our emails are good. Adam@wwgh1071.com. You're not going to believe this, Pastor Craig, so hang on to your eardrums. Danny, tell us about your typewriter collection.
Ah, okay. I retired from work, and I didn't have much of anything to do, and I decided that, and I was on Facebook, and everybody's on Facebook. Facebook is a great resource. So if you want to collect anything, or you want to learn about anything, there's a Facebook group for that. So just look, just type in the name of what it is that you're interested in, and you will find all kinds of groups on Facebook, give you all kinds of information. It's whole communities. So, I had always been fascinated with typewriters. I bought a few when I was like 16 years old and still have them. I thought, well, I'm going to start looking around for more typewriters, and I found a group online called Antique Typewriter Collectors. When I started that group, there were 300 members. There are now around 6,000 members. So it has grown very quickly in a very short period of time. The one thing about typewriters that fascinates people when they start using them is that really they do have to think before they put something on that paper, and they really do have to be concerned about the number of errors that they make. They don't have to with computers, but this makes the thought process slow down, and there's almost no effort with the computer, but you have to press on these keys. You know, it is a physical thing, and what people have found, what typewriter collectors have found, is when they take them to schools, or they expose children to them, or they expose teenagers to them, they become very fascinated with them because it's a tactile thing. It's really a tactile thing. And there are so many different manufacturers, so many different models. The history of typewriters is fascinating. Typewriters are machines that changed society and the way we live and the way we do business, the way we educate. Every part of society started to change when typewriters were introduced. And when typewriters became accessible to all of society, then the changes just ramped up.
So you can't just talk to your typewriter and say, "Hi, Smith Corona."
No.
Dear Mom and Dad, I'm doing very well in college today. You can't just do that like you can talk to your tablet or your phone. You
no.
have to actually not only type,
yes,
find a letter and touch it. You have to press down if it's a manual typewriter.
Yeah.
Wouldn't anybody, under about 35 years old, be kind of confused by that, saying, you know, where do I talk? Where's the Wi-Fi button?
Well, it doesn't take much of an explanation to let them know how to use them and what to do, and they find it fascinating, and they just become entranced with it, and they're caught up with it.
So when was the typewriter invented, and when did they first become available for business?
Yeah. Well, there are different versions of early typewriters, starting with the in the beginning of the 1800s. People got interested in finding some way of making the printing process easier and accessible to people in their own homes. Really, the first typewriter that was reasonably functional and went on the market and worked was the Malling Hansen typing ball, and it was a ball suspended above a carriage with all the keys in the ball on top. So very interesting machine. There are very few of them still left now. They're very expensive. Then at the late 19th century, the companies like Blickensderfer started producing typewriters and made them accessible and affordable for the average home. And they just took off from there, and then the companies started growing exponentially, like Royal and Smith Corona and Olivetti, and a number of other companies making
typewriters. Thinking, like, which of these brands are still around? And I look at Brother. They make printers. I regularly work on troubleshooting Brother printers, and it's a common model, and they made typewriters, but they weren't one of the original brands.
No.
I was thinking my mom's mom was a key punch operator, and she was we have a lot of, I guess, good typists in the family, and I'm thinking of Smith Corona, the IBM Selectric. But we're going back for that German brand you gave. That was a cool sounding name. We have a telephone call. Good morning. You are on The Talking Place with Adam, Danny, and Pastor Craig.
Hello.
Hi, how are you today, sir?
Yeah, let me turn this radio down.
Yes, please do. Yeah, we have a little bit of a delay, so we want to hear you in your full dulcet tone splendor.
Yeah, I'm 92 years old, and when I grew up, we had a wind-up record player sitting in the middle of the corner of the living room.
Mm-hmm. I bet you it was a Victrola.
I don't know what brand it was, but it was a pretty good size piece of furniture, sitting there probably a couple feet square and 4 or 5 feet tall. And you wound it up and put a record in it, and I think I still probably have some of those records left, maybe. I don't know. And then I've got an old electric typewriter down in the basement that's, I don't remember what brand it is, but it's a desk down in my basement, and then a portable typewriter that's manual. So,
Excellent. Interesting
hearing what you guys are saying.
Well, excellent. Pleased to hear it.
Yeah, we appreciate hearing from someone else who's an aficionado in this older mechanical.
I can barely hear you.
We appreciate hearing from someone else who's interested in this older mechanical technology. When things are just made so well.
I have no idea whatever happened to the old Victrola that was.
I think Danny might have
been gone for years.
you've got quite a few, Danny. Maybe it's at your house.
But I still have a few other records, I think.
Well, I hope you have someone in the family you're able to pass those on to when you're ready, because then they can become fascinated with them and maybe add to it.
That's possibly true. I got two granddaughters. I'll have to talk to them about that. They probably don't even know they're here.
Ah, well, that'll be something to have a conversation with them about and show them. And it's too bad you still don't have the Victrola, because then you could, demonstrate to them how they were originally played. But,
yeah, that's right.
Yeah. But they could get a small electric record player that still plays 78s.
Well, I have one of those. I get one that plays 78s and 45s and the whole thing. But
perfect.
Yeah, so.
Thank you very much for your call. It's always good to hear someone else who appreciates this older technology. Have a good day, sir. Stay well.
Enjoyed your show. Thank you. Bye now.
Adam here, substituting for the interviewer to the stars, Mr. Scott E. Spears, on a program that's either called Scott and or Glenn at 10. I kind of like that name, Pastor Craig. That was a name that I thought of. I like rhymes and stuff, as you know.
That would work. That
or
works.
On the air, and yes, we're on the air. About 2 minutes left to speak with Danny from Columbus. Questions or comments about antiques? It really is a fascinating business. Good morning. You're on The Talking Place with Adam and his special guests.
Hello?
Hi, how are you today?
I'm back with you again. Wonderful. I just had to tell you, when I was a kid, I had a Victrola. We had a Victrola we played with. And one of the records was Silver Threads Among the Gold. And if that doesn't age anybody, Silver Threads. But you know, Mom and Dad took that old record player out and threw it on in the garden and burned it up.
Oh, my.
Yes. But, yeah, I remember that very well, and I remember that record, so there's an old one for you.
Well, thank you for the memory. It's important.
You're welcome.
Thanks for the call. We always appreciate it. Adam here on The Talking Place, wrapping up a fascinating hour. As my mama also said, my mama, who could type 100 words a minute, she also said that time flies when you're having fun, and this was fun. I want to thank Pastor Craig for sitting in today.
Thank you.
Pastor Craig will be on about 11:15 a.m. EDT on Sunday, and then he will be switching to 9:15 Eastern Daylight Time or Eastern Standard Time. Well, if we ever go back to Eastern Standard Time, we may not, on the following Sundays. And again, like any program on the station, if you miss a show, it's okay. We understand you can't listen 24/7, even though we have people who do, which is great. Go to our website, WWGH1071.com. Go to the show archives, and there are hundreds and hundreds of shows that you can listen to. Danny, thank you again so much for coming on the program with me. Before we take a break for the news and features, any parting thoughts for our listeners?
Just get out there, hunt. It's an expedition every time you leave the door.
I would say every day is a adventure. Every day you wake up, even if it's gloomy outside or you have things that are stressful on your mind, it will be a learning experience. Once again, thank you, listeners, for tuning in today. We appreciate it. You can always email me on the private email server, adam@wwgh1071.com.
You're listening to WWGH Radio 107.